Good afternoon. My name is Mary Ann Horton, and I am delighted to be here at this marvelous conference, and I also greatly appreciate the opportunity to serve on this panel today. I'd like to thank my co-authors, Karen Morione and Joy Aconicon. Unfortunately, they could not be with us today. Regarding the relationships, I have no relationships to disclose. What we wanted to avoid was the situation presented in this cartoon, the frustration experienced by the little guy with the axe, and the consequences of that frustration. First, I'm going to talk about a couple of our key audiences. Then I'm going to talk about a few of the channels that we selected to implement. And then I'm going to finish with lessons learned. Today, in the interest of time, we're going to focus on two of our target audiences, the trailer residents and medical personnel. The photo that you see is an actual community of trailers where the residents lived. And in the foreground of the picture, you can see their mailboxes. One of the challenges that we experienced in working with this group is that we had to reach out to them on a personal level. And it was difficult to capture this audience because of educational levels, medical or health conditions, and the fact of their location. Many of them may have left the Gulf Coast by the time we moved into the area to provide assistance. But the advantages far outweigh the disadvantages or challenges. First, by going directly to the audience, the government gained credibility. We were transparent, and we were able to understand exactly what the residents' concerns were. And most important, we were available to personally interact with the residents. The photo is the St. Bernard Health Center, and it is still operational today. This is where the people would go for medical assistance. The advantages of working with medical personnel are that they were able to provide valuable advice and counsel to CDC on the most effective means to explain the health information on indoor air quality to the travel residents. Medical personnel are also ideal for patient and community education and information. They may be primary channels for distributing the campaign materials. They have access to the patients from the travel trailers, and they already see the residents for indoor air quality challenges and perceived formaldehyde exposure and other health and wellness challenges. One of the disadvantages is that many of the residents did not receive care because of lack of access to medical personnel. Next, I'm going to talk about a few of the communication channels that we implemented during this project. Those that I'm going to talk about are highlighted. For person-to-person communication, we used CDC's information hotline to provide timely, consistent, and accurate messages. Between July 2007 and July 2008, we received more than 7,000 calls about formaldehyde exposure. The spikes in our data corresponded to those occasions when CDC released a new report or new information, and so that was a way that we could tell that our channel was working when we could observe the spikes as they corresponded to new releases. A second channel that we used was document repositories. In 25 years of community environmental health work, the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry learned people are interested in having access to documents. ATSDR developed a system to make reports available, and we adapted their system to this project. ATSDR selected libraries to serve as a channel for distributing paper copies of reports. We selected libraries because libraries are still actively providing services to the community. The photo is a photo of the St. Bernard Parish Library. This is actually one of the repositories and is still operational. We called them last week and they said, yes, ma'am, we're still here and we're going to be here for a while. We have 16 repository locations, 9 in Louisiana and 7 in Mississippi. Some of the challenges involve the fact that many of them were closed due to damage and they did not relocate. Some of the libraries were blown away and no longer exist at all. And then some of them, even in the trailers, were only open 2 or 3 days a week. Another channel we implemented was posters. Even 3 years after Hurricane Katrina, we were still working in a post-disaster environment that was not necessarily safe. We needed to find places where people were. These are examples of poster locations we selected. Notice a major irony is that public health information is appearing in places where it has never been seen before. And public health is keeping company with elements it has never interacted with before. CDC used 2 internet channels for this project. We used MySpace.com and the CDC website. MySpace.com is a popular networking social website. It is an interactive network of friends showcasing personal profiles, blogs, groups, photos, music, and videos. The target audience is teenagers and young adults. They have approximately 200,000 new users from across the globe each day. CDC posted 2 blog entries on the MySpace website. And we did this because it was basically free for us, for our program. CDC had already purchased space on MySpace, so we just piggybacked into that space. We do not have any data regarding usage. The FEMA project has been going on for about a year. Each channel has experienced multiple changes. And for this talk, what I'm going to do is take a set of the CDC web pages and show how the changes evolved. We use the following methods for channeling the information on the CDC.gov site. We posted FEMA-related information on the CDC.gov homepage, and we updated the information architecture for the FEMA trailer study web pages. We also added spotlights to the environmental health sections on the CDC website. We also used GovDelivery for channeling information. You can see that's shown in the upper right-hand corner on the homepage. This is a self-subscription email service. Subscribers receive email messages each time the page is updated. We currently have about 8,000 subscribers to the FEMA Trailer Study webpage. This is a webpage that is currently under development. Based on research we've conducted, now that the audience for the formaldehyde information has gone way beyond residents in Mississippi and Louisiana. So based on research that we conducted recently, we are updating the website and developing it according to topic. And we're creating new labels which will center on topics rather than audiences. We're also going to replace the current content with more web-friendly content. Sometimes disconnects occur. We tried to use channels that would successfully communicate our messages. Along the way, we learned several lessons. For this project, the most important lesson that I feel like we learned is that in order to reach our primary audience, we had to go where the people were. Thank you.
All right, well, I want to thank our panel. I think it was terrific that NCH sent so many staff and ATSDR sent so many staff to give us such a comprehensive look at what was an extremely long, comprehensive project or activity that obviously consumed you probably 7 days a week, 18 to 24 hours a day. So thank you very much for coming and giving us that view. Now, I carefully shepherded our speakers so that we would have enough time for questions. I myself have four. I'm challenging you in the audience to keep me from asking those by peppering them with questions. So please, yes, over here.
Okay, I can answer it as best I can. I didn't actually do the study, but okay. I think the sampling unit was placed in the trailer mobile home park model for about an hour, and then the sample was sent to the lab. No, I'm pretty sure they went into the just the one time, and certainly one day, yeah.
Well, we encouraged them to participate, and we used a contractor to actually place the posters for us, and we gave them parameters. We told them what we were looking for, and they actually went out in the field and identified the locations based on what we asked and what we expected. I'm trying to remember, how many total posters did they place? We can't remember offhand about how many posters were placed, but I can tell you that of all the materials that we prepared, a little bit around 20,000 pieces of information were distributed to the Gulf Coast residents. And that includes our fact sheets and some samples of which are back there on the table. And in addition to the posters, there were also cards that contained similar information. So the cards were available. We couldn't have them placed directly on the poster, but the cards were also placed in the close proximity to the posters so the people had a takeaway message. So after they read the posters, they could take the card with them to help reinforce those messages.
The cards are back there.
Yeah, and the cards are back there on the table as well.
You have to meet with each other a lot. And so we worked out who owned what. Some of that was hard negotiated. We felt strongly that we owned the scientific health information about the studies that we had done. And we worked very deliberately and very vigorously to defend our ownership and to gain agreement with others that, yes, indeed, CDC owned that information, and others would refer people to CDC for that information instead of speaking about it on our behalf. Similarly, we did not own information about what people could do with regard to housing, where else they could go. And so we set up a hotline-to-hotline communication link so that CDC info operators had a direct communication link with FEMA operators and vice versa so that they could seamlessly transfer. In fact, I think they call it a warm transfer, the calls that may have arrived at one agency or the other and needed to be transferred to the other agency. And that actually is still operating for us to be able to bring it back to life if we need to.
The initial scripts were done. You saw Marianne's chart start in July 2007. Actually started in mid-July 2007, so that July number from 2007 is even more daunting. But yeah, the initial scripts were written basically within a day, and then they were reviewed later and revised. Yeah.
In the back, in the red.
I think we should have questions for Charles.
Yeah.
That's a really good question, because it's one of the things that we were aware of going on. You know, we got into the formaldehyde business because there was a great deal of interest in that particular chemical, but we had the suspicion that there were other chemicals operating as well. So not only did we do the 519 trailer study, which sampled air at a time, actually we did a lot of work to determine what time would be the best time to do the air sampling. We knew that we were at a disadvantage because we went down in December, and we knew that formaldehyde would be more readily prevalent in the warmer months, so that we knew that there were certain restrictions at the time that we were going, but we wanted to get into the field as rapidly as possible. We also have completed and posted a study that we are calling the structural study, and that's where we took some unoccupied trailers and we cut them into parts. We sent them out to Lawrence Berkeley laboratories in California and baked them in chambers and measured what was coming off of the parts. And what we found was there are a lot of chemicals in there, and the product that seemed to be, and that actually helped us isolate a product that we thought was believe is contributing most to formaldehyde emissions, and that those were the pressed wood products. Now, a complexity with this whole study, as those of you who follow it closely know, is that the vast majority of formaldehyde research was conducted in worker populations and was conducted in the 70s and the 80s. And as a result of those studies, substantive changes were made in building regulations. And so, you know, carpets are now produced differently, and building materials are different. So formaldehyde wasn't really top of mind for anyone, and suddenly it was, you know, it was something that we all had to be very concerned about. So we're looking at the VOCs that are coming off of those trailer parts, if you will, and then trying to see what we do next. And actually, that's a key point that Mike made. We've been working as, you know, providing our information equally to all audiences. That includes the trailer manufacturers who are looking at manufacturing processes and what, you know, to see if there was something in the sourcing of the product. Is there a different product that they can use that is equally cost effective that will be able to work better in the future? So, you know, we're really very excited about this project, both from the scientific and the communication standpoint.
It went swimmingly every day.
Well, you know, this is a family hour in this family regulated organization, so I don't know if we can actually tell you how that whole process worked. I think that you If there were learnings that I would take away from that, one of the things that we learned were, as we said, to limit your points of contact and have clearly defined points of contact with the partner agencies, because if multiple people are communicating through back channels, it's much more difficult to know what's being said and how you can get the response back, and then to make sure that you're communicating at the appropriate level within the agencies. And then to determine what it is that your agency wants to go to the mat for, and be very rigorous in defending that. And we rigorously defended our right to talk about our information. And we rigorously defended our perceived right to approve anything that any other agency was sending out that mentioned us. Because we found that if we didn't, then erroneous information was distributed, not necessarily with malice aforethought, sometimes with malice aforethought, but if we didn't rigorously defend our agency and our knowledge that it was possible, because other agencies have different expertise, that they would misstate the information. And as we all know, because we work with scientists daily, if you misstate scientific information, you can make a pretty big misstatement. You know, a single word, a mite versus a may, can be a pretty significant change in a scientific environment. Similarly, we stepped back from trying to speak on behalf of other agencies. I think it was a lot of person-to-person work.
The 15 meetings we held, they were our meetings. You know, it was our people getting up there talking, our people answering any questions about health, whether from the podium, or we had commission core officers such as Maria back here in the room to answer questions like that. FEMA was there. FEMA was there for those meetings entirely. They were roughly where that table is. They had a table set up and said, "We'll take your name if you want to move out tonight to a hotel." But until the very last meeting, you know, they never spoke up once, and that was what we wanted, because it was the meeting about the scientific findings.
We have more questions from this side of the room, please. These guys are beating you. Yeah, come here.
The concern overall, a lot of it related to just indoor air quality. And if you look at the materials and the other things, we talked a lot about indoor air quality. Before formaldehyde, it was mold. You saw some of the pictures. The mold was terrible. I mean, my real job, not doing this, is asthma and mold. So I was very familiar with what was going on there. And